Mr. Whitaker, Reel 23. You're telling me that on arrival at Naples, you were taken to be showered. I mean, was this a proper shower? And
yes, it was a proper shower, hot water. And when they stripped all the clothes off and stuck them in a fumigator, and just to show you that, you know, the British soldier, you know, all this talk about his sense of humour, everybody looked at one of the showers and roared with laughing. And later on, I would have described myself as a Belsen refugee. All her stomachs had gone. Her ribs stuck out, and where we'd have stomachs, all hollow. But all this did was brought roars of laughter. I can't remember if they're feathers, but it wasn't long before we were put on a train. Cattle trucks, and this again must have been hanging about a fair while, because I know they opened the door of the cattle truck in the night, and I jumped down, and there was an Italian guard prodding me there, but I indicated that I wanted to pass water, and it became friendly enough. It was pitch dark. In the distance there were dark, you could see buildings. And this man, I can always remember, it's been Roma, Vatican City. And that's all I've ever seen of just this vague. Back on the train, and the next morning we arrived at the station. We marched through a little village, a place called, it was either Vitrella or Vatrella, something like that. And we arrived at this camp, and as we went in the camp, there were some English fellows there. And they gave us cigarettes and a cup of tea.
And what was this camp called?
I think this was 68.
So PG.
PG 68. And this was a beautiful place. When I say beautiful, I'm comparatively speaking. Wooden huts, very much like the British barrack huts. There weren't a lot of us. Couple of hundred, I think, two for something in that order. And somehow I got a job in the office. I don't know if they said, you know, the good old army thing, who can play the piano, or something like that, and I put my hand up. But I got a job in the camp office where we, you know, enlisted everyone. Chap in charge was Topper Brown, I think he was from the 25th Field Regiment, Royal Artillery. And we were told that this camp was going to be a show place where when people from the Red Cross came to say our prisoners were being treated, they'd be brought here, because it wasn't far from Rouen. It was on a slope, and looking across this most beautiful view, right in the distance, miles away, you could see the Italian Alps, what's on the Apennine, is it? But you'd see these things snow on the top, way, way in the distance. This was December.
So what exactly were you doing in the office?
As I say, mainly keeping record of the prisoners.
Was it just a British-run office, or would there be...
There was a sergeant major, and there was an Italian officer. All the officers, they all spoke English. They've got the most fantastic... They were like... although they were Italians, these were mainly very nice fellows. They all spoke English, they'd all been in action somewhere, and they'd got the most fancy selection of uniforms you'd ever seen in your life. One of them, for instance, had a black uniform with red stripes, red epaulettes, and a black cap with red... Oh, beautiful. I started drawing, I could fulfil the office duties at about an hour in the morning if anybody had gone sick and wanted to know. The commandant, he was I wouldn't like to have cropped, he told us that provided we behaved ourselves, he'd find we were well, we should find we were well treated. And he told us he wasn't an Italian, he was a Sicilian. Heavily built fellow, businessman, who said, didn't know much about England, but he did know had a lot of business in New York. If you ever seen it, it had made Marlon Brando and the Godfather look like a chicken. I would not like, but he, as I said, he was a businessman, but he obviously wouldn't stand any nonsense, but he, as he said, he was out to treat us fair enough. Well then, I started drawing, and of course I drew these people, and I only got a pencil and a bit of paper. They brought me a drawing book, one or two as a matter of fact. One of them, I have the remains of it there, badly burned, which, to my surprise, it says an English drawing, but I didn't inquire where they pinched it from. And they also brought me a set of coloured pencils. And of course, when you, I did manage there to get a bit of extra odd luxuries, which I've forgotten, a few more cigarettes and things for doing caricatures of these officers in all the gorgeous uniforms. Another fellow I remember very well was the young priest assigned to the camp, and he used to come and chat religion to us, and I told him I was an atheist and this and that, but he didn't push it. But one thing he did, he announced he was off to the Vatican one morning, and he said, "I'll ask the Holy Father to bless you." And I said, "Oh well, thank you, but I don't think this, it'll do me much good." When he came back, he brought me a little cross, which I have there, look now. And I said, he announced that this had been blessed by the Holy Father. It looks like a bit of something from Woolworths, but I made some disparaging remark, but he shot me down thoroughly. He said, "Well, I should have thought in your position you'd be out for all the help you can get." I've tried rubbing it on Paul's coupons and things, but on the other hand, I wonder if they hadn't given him what sort of a rotten time I might have had if the Holy Father hadn't blessed the cross, which I did. But they were quite, as I say, he was quite an amusing young fellow, this was. He was always good for a laugh and a joke, and he did speak excellent English.
And what about the ordinary Italian guards?
Do you know, I can't remember them at all. Of course, I was moving in privileged company. Didn't last. We were there over Christmas, and at Christmas, the local villagers did. I know none of us have a good word to say for Italians, but one thing I have remembered is that they sent us up two bags of chestnuts. I never realised, but apparently chestnuts are a great crop in Italy. And somehow they managed to make this into some sort of, I don't know whether they boiled them or whatever, but they did add them to the rations. I can't remember much about the food, but it was a bit better than we'd been having in Africa.
Any red cross parcels yet?
Now, there may have been, of an idea that there was a working camp who built this camp, or helped set it up, a small party of Englishmen. And I think they contributed. I know they gave us quite a lot of English cigarettes, which nearly killed us. We thought the Italian ones were strong, but we didn't realise. They just tasted bad. The tobacco wasn't very strong at all. And players' cigarettes, I can always remember, reduced us to coughing and choking. And as I said, they'd produced this marvellous first cup of tea we'd had since June. But, as I say, it didn't last. Shortly after Christmas, they announced that, in view of the situation in North Africa, this camp was being taken over by Italian troops. And I know all the officers came and told me how sorry they were. And we were put on the train again. And I lost my Sergeant Major. But again, I have no idea why they broke us up. Top of Brown disappeared. I saw him again near the end of the war in the last camp I was in. But he went. I'd lost my office job after just two or three weeks, and we were on the way to the north of Italy. We didn't know where.
And so you were still with Walker and Sykes?
Still got, there was Jack and John, they were in charge of huts at this time. But to say I was, heaven knows how, I don't know how I got in, but it was a nice number for a week or two. Anyway, we were entrained again. I hadn't a clue where we were going, but we were allowed to get off and relieve ourselves at a place called Bologna, which I remember because I saw the name on the station. They hadn't done like they did apparently in England, take the station name down. And another thing I can remember there, my first streamline train. There was this streamline train, rail car type thing, went belting through the station. And of course the big joke before the war that was Mussolini had made the train run out of time. But I say this, I was quite delighted seeing this streamliner. But we finished up at a big camp, PG-57, Udine, which wasn't ever so far from is the other one, is that another trip? Anyway, it was in the north of Italy. Dead flat. Huge camp, watchtowers, real prisoner of war camp. Tripwire, you know, a couple of metres from the main wire. Watchtowers, compounds, as I say, your original POW camp, wooden huts. Dead flat plain, and in the distance to the north, we could see the Alps.
And you got there, roughly speaking, January 43.
Yes, end of December and January 43, and it was bitterly cold. We had at some time, probably out of the trial, we issued with Italian uniforms.
What were they like? Could you describe them?
Cold. They were green coloured, they had knickerbocker type things which fastened around you just below your knees, and they were very thin material, and we'd also been issued with Italian underwear.
Were the uniforms marked at all to make it clear you appeared?
They had a big red diamond-shaped patch on the jacket and on your trousers above your knee. They said that was in retaliation for the British who marked Italian prisoners. But of course, the Italian prisoners had British battle dress. They didn't send uniforms to the Italian prisoners in England. Whereas later on at Udine we did get issued with British with battle dress. In fact, one thing I can remember, the first thing we got was British underwear, long johns and vests. And they were I found then that if you're going to keep warm, the first thing you've got to have is warm undies. That made a world of difference. And eventually, as I say, British battle dress. We were stuck since then. We'd been dumped on these people. We were stuck in a stone hut. The camp was divided. There was a road went through the middle of the camp, and there were two compounds on each side of this main road. A big stone hut, which was a recreation hut, in each compound, and wooden huts for barracks. But we were put in this big stone hut. Three-story bunk beds with six. Tier of six, three high, and they were high. People at the bottom couldn't see to the electric light. They said you've got to make pass of 25, so we grabbed 25 fellas, and Jack was in charge and I was his assistant, and we commandeered top bunks, which were just under the light, so we could see to leave.
That was the advantage, wasn't it?
That was the advantage. The disadvantage is got further to get down, rushing out to the toilet at night, but it was bitterly cold.
Was there no heating at all?
No heating at all.
No, was there a stove fuel, or was it just...
I can't remember a stove or anything in any of the huts, curiously enough. We were in this... eventually we did move out of the stone hut into a wooden hut, where... I think there were 50 to the hut. There was a Yorkshire Harold, I've forgotten his other name, in charge. and Jack and I had our 25 men. John Walker was still with us, but I think we got a bit cheesed off with John at this time. He was a bit, nice chap, but a bit pedantic and a lot of things. And it was rather curious because he was lumbered with the most uncouth, roughest chap you've ever met in your life.
Who was this?
And I can't remember his name. Jack and I have often laughed about it. He was a nice enough fellow, but really rough. Because John, you've met John, he's quite a well-educated fella. And this news, I think by this time, of course, it was every man for himself. And Jack and I decided to muck in together. And as I say, poor John.
Who was this chap? Where was he from?
I haven't a clue. It was just one of our 20. One of our 25, John, I think, must have been in charge of another group. And this chap had sort of latched on because what they told us, the prisoners were already there, that Red Cross Pulse was worth always one to a man. They were often one between two. So the first thing you did was find someone with whom you were compatible and wouldn't pinch the stuff when you weren't looking and eat it out.
Did John get on with, John Walker get on well with this man then?
He was always telling him off and trying to educate him.
But you think he liked it? I mean, did they get on well?
Well, they got on reasonably, but it was a most amusing combination. But he was the last of the South Knots, the only fear was then. Met some interesting people. Two I particularly remember, one of them became my best friend later on, Tom Tate, who lived up near Newcastle, Whitley Bay, and his friend Archie Sables. Now Archie was about 40 years old, and Archie was a sailor, and when I say sailor, he had been a boy sailor on square riggers in the First World War. And I spent a lot of time with him, and amongst the other things I drew, I haven't got any examples, I drew sailing ships, and Archie used to insist that I name all the sails and most of the ropes. It was very interesting. One thing I can remember, if he could see the sunset, he'd tell you what the weather would be overnight and for the next morning. And he explained that the skippers in the old days, if he could foretell the weather, then he wouldn't have the all hands on deck during the night, which the crew loved. But he was a most amazing man. He'd still got his sailmaker by trade, and he still had what he called his palm, which he fitted round his thumb, and he pushed the needle through when they were sailing canvas. He'd gone on from sailing ships, and he'd got his first mate's certificate in coastal vessels. But he'd retired from the sea considerable time before the war, and joined this Northumberland Artillery Regiment.
They were all
a good companion. He was, with nothing else to do, he was always good for a tale of rounding Cape Horn, which he had done. We had a book in the camp, had a very good library.
Hang on a minute, you were all locked in together. Was there any tension, bored and all? I mean, did you fall out amongst, were the people you didn't like or fell out with?
Yes, there were some of them, but we avoided them.
Did it ever come to anything more than ignoring? I mean, were there blows or?
There were occasional scraps, but amongst our hut in the 50, we were pretty peaceful. There were odd fights and things in the camp, and occasionally you'd get, take yourself off. People got, this camp was mostly Australian and New Zealand, and it was run by the Carabinieri, who were a different kettle of fish entirely to the Italian army. They were tough. They'd had an escape before we got there, and the people concerned in the escape had all been put in a hut, which was out of bounds. They'd put wire around it,
Now, you were telling me about things that you could do in this camp. And you mentioned the library.
Yes, there was a good library.
Who ran it? The prisoners?
The prisoners ran it.
And
all the books had been supplied to the Red Cross.
And what sort of choice of literature would you have there?
Well, one thing I remember, they've got an absolute wonderful set of... it was called the Badminton Library. And it's all sports. Even to real tennis. And these were big, thick volumes, and it explained the rules, how to play, and with nothing else to do. And sailing, there was one volume on sailing. And this went for everything from dinghies up to quite big ships. I read that sort of thing. Anything I could, there were quite a lot of fiction, but you soon ran through that. I read Shakespeare, I read quite a bit of Shakespeare. As I say, but the main thing was I had got quite a good stock of biographical, and as I say, particularly hunting. They've got a set of, I've forgotten his name, a very famous, not Jeeves, Jollocks. They've got a complete set of Surtees, isn't it, Roden? I'm showing their memory of now. I'm sure it's a chap called Surtees. They've got a complete set of these works. And I must say, I'm not a fox, or a fox hunting, but I read all these. I read all these books, and as I say,
You were allowed to take. Where was the light? Was it the, just
it was
part?
In the middle of the, it was in the middle of the camp.
And was it
and
a separate
sign for that? You had to sign for the books, and you're allowed to have them. I can't remember whether it was a minute, but it was a week. But you could reserve books if you knew, if you got well in and you knew what was there. It was quite well run.
Now, what else was there for your entertainment?
Well, in the winter, for quizzes.
How were they run?
They ran them into hut. You know, hut number 25 versus 26. Mostly run by a New Zealander, who was the chief, as I remember. They also came round every night, a chap came round and read out the news. Somewhere they've got a radio. Never found out where, but they had access to the news. And they'd come round the hut every night and read it out. They had a loudspeaker on top of the recreation hut, and the Italians would announce the news too during the day. But the only Italian I know is who would do a tre quattro. They'd count us every morning, and the way they'd count is you'd line up in threes and march past, and the officer there would count the ranks going past, do the tre quattro, and occasionally he'd lose his rhythm and stop, and you'd all have to go back and march again.
Now, what else was there? Was there any sort of, you mentioned any lectures or any courses you could take?
There were lectures from time to time.
What sort of topics? Same as before?
Same as before. New Zealand's odd one to tell you about farming in New Zealand, sheep farming in New Zealand. I played bridge a bit, not with John Walker. I did occasionally with John, but I played several times with South Knox Hussars warrant officer who was there, who'd appeared. He wasn't in our compound. Chap called Claude Earnshaw, who was like John Walker up to about counterclass in bridge playing. And I know I must say I'm a rotten card player, but bridge, of course, was largely a matter of bidding, and I never got my partners into trouble bidding. And I'm proud to say I have made my grand slam, so I think having done that, like most things, if I've done it once, that's it. But if I had passed the time on when. And John occasionally, I know people would say come and make up a four, but come summertime, there was lots of sport. There was quite a large square in each compound, and they played cricket. Had one bat, one set of stumps, so you bowl from one end, and they had They'd made a pitch by digging out gravel and making a very hard patch in the batting area. There were rules, of course. If it went past the wicketkeeper in our compound, it was 2. At various points, it was 4. 4 if you got it past the bowler, and each boundary had its own, you know, it wasn't necessarily 4. 1 was 3, 2, and whatever. The balls were made by someone in the camp out of string. The outside was string, and they managed to get this string, and it was absolute energy to keep its shape. And it was like a weave. And it was the same size and about the same weight as a cricket ball. You could hit it, but it wouldn't carry. In other words, you didn't hit it out of the compound. Not unless you were an Australian six-footer, as one or two of them. But mainly, whatever you could not, you know, it wouldn't carry, so you could hit. One pad we had.
What was it like to bowl? I mean, would it bowl
like... It'd bounce. And if you talk about spin, I was second 11 captain. My role in life's always been chief assistant or second 11. First 11 captain played in the Yorkshire League, which was our hot common down. And occasionally, people would get fed up and would want to play. And I got a game in the first 11. And they meant it. These people played... the Australians, if you've heard about test matches in Australia, well, I can assure you that if you're playing an Australian put, you'd get out the first time it was an area that was horrendous. You'd go out with your bat, you know, and this was just a knockabout, and a voice would shout, "Your mother never got married, and your old man was a bastard too." They'd abuse you right, left and centre. And if our lot were bowling, there'd always be cries of, "You'll never get him out." I've heard it since on Northern England televised from Sydney. They had all the, what they now call sledging. I always remember playing once, and there was a fast bowl in the first 11, and there was an Australian, and it was pretty fast. And as he came up, the rotten wicket keeper said, "Broke a fellow's leg last week." Oh, it was a joy. It passed time on. As I say, it was better to play it like that than mess about.
Would the ball hurt if it hit you?
By Jove, would it?
So it's like a problem.
It was hard. I don't know if it had a wooden core, but they were beautiful, mate.